So what's going on with John Cass? Well, that's my favorite subject, me. I guess I might feel, you could say I could feel like the people of Dalton, Illinois, whose mayor, Tiffany Henyard, refuses to resign. And I'm sure that's excruciating for them. Well, me, I've had gallstones, an attack of the pancreas. So I've been in a lot of pain. But in the meantime, the World Cup of Astronomy is going on right now. And Jeff's so excited. He's like a little kid going to the Harry Potter Fest.
Yeah, John, no, it's the solar eclipse that's happening April 8th. You know, and it's a really cool thing. And I'm excited because I went in 2017. I went down to Central Illinois, well, Southern Central Illinois, at Southern University, right. Carbondale. That was where NASA held their headquarters for it, which is funny because Carbondale is ironically getting is another shot at this and seeing it again for the second time in 7 years. But then it won't come through there for another 600 years or so at least. But it's something to behold. It's an amazing humanistic feeling, like the idea of you feel so small in comparison of, the world around you. And it's amazing that we get to see it, twice in my lifetime. I'll have seen it in a partial eclipse when I was a kid. And it's just a cool feeling that thinking, over the eons, people have seen this and experienced it. And it's just the thought process, that snapshot of time when it happened, where is humanity? What was the technology like? And jumps.
A staple of science fiction.
Exactly.
You've got the time traveler going back and forth through time. Standing in front of Dalton, you could be in front of the Dalton Town Hall, and she's refusing to resign. Corruption allegations all around, and you could stand there and say, "The gods are angry with her." And then the sun eclipses, the eclipse of the sun, and the people will freak out.
Exactly,
and that's how it's done.
And there are points in history where people have used rulers who had mathematicians, because the math on it isn't the hardest thing in the world.
Soothsayer. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. But if you can figure out the calculus, relatively when it's going to happen. So you can use that to your advantage and really dominate your rule by doing such a thing, like you said. The gods are angry. So it's really cool. So my wife and I are heading out to see the path of totality. And Rick DeMaio was a fantastic meteorologist and a big space nerd himself, and known from TV, known from radio.
Right.
He's a teacher at Lewis University, and he's the type of guy who loves to geek out about this stuff. He's got some insight as to how good of a chance and a good view we're going to get on April 8th and what's going on there, and talk a little bit about the science behind when this happens, why it happens, and how
this is stronger force than the early Star Trek conventions. but it's real and it's a beautiful thing. So yeah. Enjoy yourself. I'm going to finish, I hope, my experiments with morphine as this continues, and we'll see what happens with the surgery. I'm just not going to get driven to the River Styx. I drove myself last time to the edge of the River Styx, and I'm not going to get on Chiron's boat. I'm just going to chill, and let's see what happens.
But we'll definitely be back at it next week for sure.
All right, buddy. Have fun.
Thanks, John.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall-style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look at this. The Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
All right, as promised, Rick DiMaio, a longtime friend and a cohort in the world of broadcast media. Rick, you may remember from Fox 32, on the radio all the time, WGN, WS, I'm all over the place. We love Rick. Rick is an adjunct aviation professor at Lewis University and also an adjunct climate change professor at Loyola. And Rick, welcome to Chicago Way.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. And hopefully what we end up talking about will actually come true, which is a solar eclipse that people can see and not just talk about for the last, 3 to 4 months.
Right? I know. As is anything these days, it becomes a spectacle just to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate you joining us on the Chicago Way. I'm a huge, as people will know who listen here, a big science nerd. And I did go in 2017 down to Carbondale, and it was all about the eclipse there and just how cool it was.
Right.
Have you ever experienced the full eclipse of the sun?
Yeah, I did. It was, probably about 30 years ago. I happened to be just in the right location. I forget exactly where it was at that time, but it was pretty darn cool. It was more like a partial eclipse. And I remember clearly how all of a sudden in the middle of the day, it went from like noon to like maybe dusk in about 5 or 10 minutes. And then it just went away. And then you can kind of see how people were looking up at the sky. You can see the way the lights, the street lights, became dim. But this one's going to be a lot better. A lot of people talk about how, this one is going to be better than the one that we had in 2017, primarily because it's a little bit more of a fuller solar eclipse. The last one, I think we referred to as annular. This one, you're actually going to see the corona, which means that part of the sun that you can almost see like almost flames or solar flare kind of activity coming off the edge. And of course, you would need special equipment, glass wise or telescope wise or camera to see that. But it's interesting, Jeff. Oftentimes people say, oh my God, this is a once in a lifetime thing. It actually is more frequent than you think.
Right.
It's actually, we have 2,380 solar eclipses of all kinds, partial, full, or what I was just talking about there about the annular, every 1,000 years or about 2 to 3 eclipses a year. And they don't always occur, obviously, in the same place. So this one, thankfully, is occurring basically from the southwest coast of Mexico, moves across Texas, crosses southern Illinois, and then eventually exits the area around Newfoundland. Whereas the one that occurred in 2017 literally came across from Oregon from the northwest and slid across the southern Midwest. That's the one that you were talking about. That one turned out to be pretty darn good. This one, if the weather cooperates, should be a bit better.
Yeah, this one will be actually, if you look at any of those maps, and there's a couple of them out there that NASA put out where they compare both lines of the 2017. The one this year is a much larger blob or shadow, and some of that has to do with that the sun itself is, we're a little bit closer, just happens to be in where we are in the year.
Right.
And part of it also has to do with the fact that the sun is also going to be at one of its solar maximums, which we won't have to get into. We can, but it's, this 11-year cycle where the sun has an ebb and flow of its heat and energy output. But it's for those who are looking curious, it'll start right around, so Chicago time, Central time, it'll start in Texas right around 1:27 and then make its way through the Midwest to about 2:06 our time, Indiana, between 2:04, right around 2:00.
Right.
You'll be able to see it in Chicago, Midwest, and then it'll curve its way. It's kind of cool to think about, the moon flying across the whole span of our continent, or at least our country, in a span of, 30 minutes. Just to think about that size is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the actual total time from when it enters the Rio Grande to when it exits northern part of upstate New York, it's a little over an hour and a half that time. But the best way to do this for people listening is to make your face the surface of the earth. Take your right hand, put it about a foot in front of you. Take your left hand, extend it all the way out. All right, your left hand is the sun, and the right hand is the moon. Okay, And if you take your right hand that you can't now all of a sudden see your left hand, basically the shadow, which is then the moon facing, you know, basically the shadow from the moon is now on your face. If you're down in certain places in the southern areas of Illinois and Indiana, the directness of the moon and the sun perfectly in line with your nose, that's what it's going to look like when you're down across southern Illinois. And because the mentioned there, Jeff, the sun is at its maximum time of year, the angle is a little bit higher, the sun's a little bit brighter. That's what's going to make this a little bit better than the one we had in October. Now, if you take that same position of your hands and you move it to the right of your face, but you're still looking straight ahead, that's what's going to be the case if you're up here in Chicago. So in other words, there's going to be a shadow appearing over southern Illinois, but you're going to be kind of on the northern part of the shadow. So you're still going to be able to see brightness, but you're also going to also be able to see a little bit of darkness as well. So that's kind of one way of looking at it. If you take your hands and you go from right across your face and then to the left, basically swinging it from right to left, that's pretty much how the eclipse is going to traverse the continent. And it's really interesting because the radius of totality is only about 120 miles, and the duration of totality is only about 4.5 minutes. So depending on exactly where you are underneath the totality, it could be about 4.5 minutes. If you're about maybe 100 miles north, it could only be about 2 minutes. So it's going to be really, really close, depending on if you get underneath the right spot. And of course, this all has depends, you know, whether or not the weather cooperates or whether or not you have enough room. This is how I'm describing it to people. If there's enough room on the highways for all the cars basically stopping and going, I think this is a good spot, honey. Let's move right here.
That right.
I guarantee that's what's going to happen.
Oh, for sure. I don't doubt that. And it'll be interesting. And it's one of those things that is very, you know, you said, like you said, it happens a lot, but there was a NASA stat out there that any singular point on the planet, it's like 300 years to 600 years between when you experience. And so the idea that like Carbondale is getting it twice is really interesting that it's happening so quick.
Right.
But now it won't happen again here for another probably 1200 years.
Right.
Just because the way the Earth and the mechanics of the moon and the Earth work.
Right. And I think the thing about it that a lot of people are really, I think, more into it now than they were in 2017 was 2017 was like the first one where you literally had the ability to take your phone out of your back pocket, put it in HD mode, film it, and then share it with people. Nah. And now what are we, 7 years later, now you have even more people being able to do that. So I think technology has definitely allowed us to view it and share it much more than we've ever had before. The ability for people to go online and get educated about it is also, I think, a little bit more exciting as well. So it's not like this event hasn't happened. It's just that you have more and more people interested in it and being able to not have to rely on other sources of information to figure out their own game plan. It's basically them going online, trying to figure out what the weather is going to be, trying to figure out with their maps, you know, app on where they're going to go. And then they go there. I literally have had probably 24 requests through either personal or email or text asking me, what's the weather going to be like over the second part? And then where should I go? And I actually had a student, I'm not kidding you, Jeff, a student yesterday say to me, Mr. DeMau, my class ends at 9. I'm going to leave right away and drive to Illinois. And I'm like looking at him, I'm like going, you realize that's about a 4-hour drive. He goes, yeah, but I think I'll make it. I'm like, you realize there's going to be traffic and you realize you're not the only one who's going to be doing that.
So I'm going to race the moon to Indianapolis. That's
basically that's what he was telling me he was going to do. So basically, I'm predicting this now, there's going to be three stories here. OK, the first one is there's going to be an eclipse, right?
Sure.
The second one is whether or not we're going to see it based on the ability of Mother Nature to make it available for us, right, to cooperate. And the third one is the news coverage of all the people trying to watch it. I guarantee you there's going to be video. And the best part is probably going to be drone video of probably were probably watching hundreds, if not thousands, of cars stuck somewhere on I-70 or I-55 or I-65 over Southern Illinois and Southern Indiana. Literally, those are two lane highways.
Yeah.
Literally on both the left and the right emergency lane, just stopping, trying to figure out whether or not this is the place where it's going to be. And part of that is due to the fact that when the eclipse begins in the state of Texas, it's already known that Texas is going to be basically clouded over and most likely raining during the day on Monday. So because Texas is such a big state, you're going to have a huge number of people leaving northern Texas and most likely the day before driving into Arkansas and basically waiting for this. Okay. Now you, and I'm serious about this.
Yeah.
Now there is absolutely.
I was coming back in 2017 from Carbondale that day, that afternoon. We stopped and got lunch first, which is a tragic mistake.
Right.
We tried mapping the back road, which almost wound us up in a field, which is going to be part of the coverage too. But mind right. you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And this is going to be the third story here. Is the event itself. So it's kind of like meteorologists who do storm chasing. I've done it before where you try to figure out a couple of days before where it's going to happen. You try to figure out your plan. You try to figure out how you're going to get there. And then you try to figure out how you're going to go someplace else based on, you know, current trends of weather. But yet this is not storm chasing. This is eclipse chasing. And it literally lasts for about 4 minutes.
Right.
So I would not be surprised if you're going to hear some pretty crazy stories of people just racing down the highway, trying to get to a spot where they can see it. And again, that's the great thing about science, is that unpredictable part of it that makes it so fun for the scientists to actually sit back and watch and go, look, you see, I told you this was going to be cool. And it's going to be cool.
I love it. And it's also, it is a really important thing to be able to track and use, you know, science will use this moment because it's happening in their backyard to do a lot of interesting things about how the sun interacts with the ionosphere and the atmosphere itself. And, and you guys study some of that. I mean, are you teaching any of that and covering any of that in what you're doing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I've sent out numerous links. There's been a bunch through NASA. There's been a bunch through NOAA. To me, the best one is pivotalweather.com. And if you type in pivotalweather.com, it'll actually pull up information relating to eclipse 24. So if you just type in those words, that should be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then what ends up happening is you'll get a page that literally has four different forecasts: the Canadian Ensemble, the American Ensemble, the European Ensemble, and the National Weather Service blend. So what we do is we take all these different forecast models and we would combine them. And we try to figure out what's going to happen. Okay. So obviously a forecast is only as good as the data coming in and then the data going out.
Sure.
So two things will happen. We have a lot of cloud cover developing over the desert Southwest. We have a lot of low-level moisture coming in from the Gulf of Mexico. And the low-level moisture part is, I think, the hardest thing to forecast. High clouds are actually pretty easy because they're visible from far away from the satellite. But it does look like, from what I can tell, based on how things will be by Monday at noon, we're looking at almost 90% cloud cover from the Rio Grande up to about the Red River, which is the border of Oklahoma and Texas. Once you get into about the Little Rock, Arkansas area, that cloud cover drops down to about 80%. Once you get into Carbondale and Evansville, Indiana, it's down to about 50%. Now, that's actually a little bit lower than the numbers the day before yesterday and the day before yesterday, meaning that the numbers have actually begun to trend upwards. And that's what a lot of people are beginning to look at, is the trend. Because remember, when you look at long-term forecasts, just like we used to talk about, you know, hurricanes, it's like, well, yesterday's run had it moving into Tampa. Today's run has it moving into Gainesville.
Sure.
And it looks like it could trend to go into Destin, Florida by the time we get closer to that. So a forecast is the forecast, but a trend of a forecast is also something that we have to look at. But the bottom line, there's going to be a very, very small window between literally the Carbondale area, Evansville, and about Indianapolis between about noon and about 2 o'clock. And I got a feeling, Jeff, this is where a lot of people are going to be heading in that particular area. Now, granted, you know, the eclipse continues to go, as you mentioned before, into Ohio. By that time, the cloud cover thickens up again a little bit. Yeah. So again, we're looking at literally a path. If you would take your index finger and your pinky and try to spread it as far apart as you can, take your thumb from your left hand and put it in between the index finger and the pinky, and the thumb represents the area of clear skies, potentially skies over Indiana and Illinois. It's not a lot, unfortunately, and that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, and you know, that's the NASA and all these groups are, you know, promoting it is, you know, the experience, you know, getting there is not necessarily, but it'll still be for people who even under cloud cover. I mean, it's going to get dark. Like it'll be, you know,
bingo.
Like nighttime. So it's still something to experience. And, you know, throw your mind back to, you know, pre-industrial human history and thinking, what am I experiencing? You know, that idea of where we were when, which I do always love the idea of someone having a advanced calculus mathematics in their guild and like, oh, hey, we can predict these things. All right, let's do it. And then using it to their advantage. I love those stories throughout history.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the part that's being kind of forgotten about because, you know, the bottom line is you're going to have probably one or two people that are going to have just fantastic video of this and you'll be able to see it online. Yeah. But in the areas where it's going to be cloudy, and there's going to be many areas where it's going to be cloudy, in the middle of the day, it's going to literally appear for about 4 or 5 minutes, like nightfall. It's going to be dark. I don't know if you know about this, but the White Sox are playing the Cleveland Indians in Cleveland. Did you hear about that?
I did.
Yeah, 4 o'clock game. I'm thinking totality passes them at about 3:15. Why not make the game 2 o'clock?
Right.
So when you get into the third or fourth inning, all of a sudden it's like, okay, here it comes. and instead of the players looking at, you know, the development of the game on the field, everybody's looking up going, oh my God, it's actually here.
Yeah.
So it's almost like Moses predicting all those different plagues that he had against Pharaoh, and they're actually coming true, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's the power of science and knowing what it is.
Power of science is definitely powerful when it works out, right?
Right, definitely when it works out. So what else? I mean, you always have some fun, interesting stories or stuff you like to cover on kind of related or adjacent to this. I mean, is there What do you got?
Okay, so first off, you know, I teach four classes of aviation meteorology at Lewis. Three of them are face-to-face. And I was showing this to my students yesterday, and I'm like, okay, guys, if we know it's going to be cloudy, all right, and you're an Elon Musk, you're a Jeff Bezos, wouldn't you be kind of like in a better role of servicing the people by basically getting a couple of pilots to fly some Lear jets? Or even, you know, rent out a 747 and fly it basically from Del Rio, Texas, underneath the eclipse all the way over to Cleveland, right? Think about that. You can do that, right?
Right.
You can actually fly an airplane either underneath the eclipse or maybe go from the north side to the south side. And from that view, you can actually see a shadow, kind of like if you ever noticed how – you know, underneath a big thunderstorm with a shaft of rain, how it looks dark. But you don't really see that unless you're above the ground, you know, 15 or 20,000 feet. So to me, this is where someone in the aviation community or private airplanes or things like that, private jets, could get people up in an airplane, you know, charge them $15,000, $20,000 and say, look, you can actually see where the shadow is, you know, developing across.
Yeah.
And you can, Jeff, you can actually do that.
That's fun.
Yeah. Oh, I think it'd be fantastic because all you have to do is get above the clouds and
right.
Have the best view in the world. Now, is that going to drive the national air traffic control space people nuts? Probably so, because they'll be like, okay, what's your flight plan? And it's like, well, it's a zigzag. They go, well, we can't approve that. Sorry.
Right. Fun to watch in mass on like a flight radar, just mass of people just following, training across the planet.
But even the people who already have tickets on commercial airplanes that will be going across the eclipse, you know that the pilots are going to be at one point going, okay, everybody. Now, we really want everybody to stay in their seats, but if you kind of want to get up and move to the left side of the airplane and don't do it all at once, that's going to tip the center of balance or something like that. To me, that's the coolest story that I have yet to hear people potentially, you know, or talk about what could actually be out of that. Because the only way to really see it you know, without having cloud cover around you, is to get an airplane and fly above the clouds. And it's it certainly do it if we wanted to. So I think you're going to see some really cool video from people's phones on airplanes of that little sliver of darkness. And whether or not pilots will cooperate and go, yeah, let's take it, you know, 30 miles off track. I don't know if the airlines are going to allow to do that. But if you do have that ability, I think you should take advantage of it.
That's fantastic. Well, Rick, it's been great to catch up with you and talk a little eclipse today. Are you, obviously, I'm sure you're in class. Are you guys going to do anything to try to see part of it? Or are you yourself trying to see what you can see from Chicago? Or are you just, I'll see it online?
Kind of? No. I'm actually teaching two classes on Monday at Oakton Community College. And during the time, I have an 8 o'clock and a noon class. So during my noon class, most likely we'll take a break, go outside, check it out. Hopefully it'll be somewhat, you know, impressive from a standpoint of people going, wow, that's cool. And you know what? You'll always get kids that will go, that was it? I thought it was going to be better.
Sure.
But, you know, that's okay. You know, you're going to have always going to have kids to do that. But the bottom line is I think if people really want to see about as good of an eclipse as you can get, you got to go south of a line of Terre Haute to Indianapolis down to about Bloomington, which is not the Bloomington, Bloomington, Indiana, over to about Carbondale. That along that line, Jeff, right now I'm looking at about a 40 to 50% cloud cover. Anywhere south of that, it doesn't look good. But that's okay. So for people coming from Chicago, you're going to be on the northern side of the clouds. Anybody coming from south to north, likely you're going to have to go further north. So again, I-57, I-55, I-65, all of those roads going southbound are going to be pretty crowded during the early morning hours on Monday. And then we'll see how it we'll see what it looks like coming back Monday afternoon, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll report in for sure, because we'll see. Well, we're coming back Tuesday, but we'll be down there and we're ready for it. Well, Rick, it's been great. Thanks so much for jumping on here and helping me talk a little science and earth nerdiness, as John would call me. Rick, anywhere you direct people to find you if they want to track you down and follow what you do?
Oh, every once in a while I post stuff on Facebook, but I'm not a big Facebook fan. I don't do a lot of that because I probably have too much time interacting with my students. And I kind of want to make sure my students don't know too much about me.
From an air of mystery. But, I understand. I get it.
Yeah. But you know, go to college and you'll find me at one of the many schools that I teach at. about that.
There you go. At a college near you.
At a college near me. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Rick. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, Jeff. Good having you with this really cool event today. And let's hope for some sunshine, right?
Amen.
Thanks to Rick DeMaio, Professor of Aviation Meteorology at Lewis University. And me, I'm John Cass, Greek Orthodox Christian, father, husband, editor-in-chief of your favorite website for common sense, johncassnews.com. Join us for a cup of common sense. And with me here, as always, is my friend, physics teacher of the future, lover of astronomy, Jeff Carlin. Join us again next week, won't you, for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.